Welcome back here to Charlotte, the Capital One Orange Bowl Media Tour, sponsored by Duffy Sports Grill. Joe, we'll send it back to you.
All right, Woody, thank you so much. Al Riveron, head of ACC officiating, longtime NFL official as well, and still a very young man living here in South Florida. And Al joins us this morning. We're just talking off the air, so many things going on. And I always wonder this, because as you know, you guys get a lot of calls right, but when you don't, people, you know, especially people gambling, you got to hear all the whining, complaining. You told me, though, the numbers overall, Al, are pretty good, though.
Well, Joe, first of all, good morning. Thanks for having me. And let's go back to the young part. You got to keep saying that during this segment. It makes me feel good when somebody says I'm still young.
Well, that means I'm older than you, Al. That's why I had to say that.
Well, I would say pickleball, but that's a bad word with you. Just
yeah,
stand at tennis court.
Yeah, don't do
okay.
That. Tennis, yeah, exactly.
I wouldn't do it to you, Joe. So we talk about calls, and obviously you and I were talking off air here a second ago. It's if you have to evaluate somebody and you have an employee that works for you, and they are correct 98% of the time after you do your review, I'm sure you'd be pleased with him, wouldn't you?
Yes.
Well, that's the rate that the officials in college football perform at.
Wow.
But unfortunately, that other 2% is the one that really people worry about. And as I told you off air also, as long as coaches coach, you show me the last time that a coach put their players in the correct scheme 177 plays in a row, and I'll, you know, let's hire that guy forever. As long as coaches coach, players play, and officials officiate, we're going to make mistakes. The last time that Dan Marino went 30 for 30, when was that? It just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. So we're going to make mistakes, and obviously that 2% is going to show up. And hopefully we sit there and we say we hope it doesn't happen in a critical part of the game, what we call a game impact call. And if it doesn't happen there, then we're okay. We move on to the next one.
So, Al, I got to ask you, one of the big ones has always been the targeting call because of the amount of time guys leave and you have to – decide, and you know, defenseless player, the whole thing you take in as you review it. What's your thoughts on it and how college football's handled it?
Well, player safety is number one. If we don't protect our athletes, and if that doesn't trickle down to Joe, to the not only to the high school level but to the youth league level, we got to make sure that Mr. and Mrs. Smith are okay with the rules and let Sally and Johnny play. And we've got to make sure that we protect our game, and that's number one. That's just paramount. And when you look at the targeting rule, like you said, it's divided up into two different sections. We have the defenseless player, where he cannot be forcibly contacted to the neck or head area. And then we have the second part of the rule, which entails targeting with the crown of the helmet. And that one's defined as a 6-inch radius at the top of the helmet. I think college football is at a great place. As we can see, the targeting has gone down year after year. We understand that sometimes we're sitting there watching the game on TV or live, and the naked eye really doesn't pick up what happened. But then when we stop it and we look at it, we do see the targeting, or we see the contact to the neck or head area. And that's something that the coaches have done a terrific job. The players have done an excellent job, and it's moving in the right direction. But we still have to be very concerned. As you know, we have the data now. We have the medical data that tells us that there are certain ways to make a tackle and certain ways not to make a tackle. And we have to make sure that we adhere to that.
Al, one thing I really like we were just talking off the air about is the review and how quickly it seems to me college football is able to get the call, get it right, and get back and get the game going again.
Well, you said it there, Joe. The second part about it is the first part about it is getting it right. You mentioned that number two. And then there's a time. We understand that we have to maintain the flow of the game. I go back to 8 seconds of play, 177 plays, and if you do the math, our college game takes about 321, 322 to play. There's a lot of non-football playing time in there. And the last thing we want is to stop the game and go back to Charlotte or Birmingham, whatever it is, and then watch some guys handle a targeting or did he step out of bounds. But I tell you, in the ACC, we do a terrific job. We were number one in the country last year as far as our review time. We really expedited the process, and we were good. We have a good flow going in Charlotte.
You're familiar with the NFL game as a part of your life for a long, long time. I'm just curious, this big debate of whether guys need to do it year-round and need to be in schools when they're not, and you can't just do it the way it's being done. Do you like the way they're doing it, or do you think officials need to spend more time in the off-season really studying the craft?
Joe, when you get to this level and then to the next level, if you're not putting in your time, and what's time? Unfortunately, in football, we play one game a week, where in basketball, you really can officiate every night if you want to. So we can only practice our craft at this level one day a week. However, technology, this is where technology has really stepped up. We're at the point now where we have so much technology that the guys and gals can practice their craft. I mean, we know where their eyes are going. We know where they're looking. We can do all that with technology. We tried in the National Football League a few years ago with full-time officials. And at the end of the year, we did a study. And the results really did not show that major improvement for what was invested and for the time that the officials put off during the offseason. So unless somebody comes up with another wild idea, really right now, there's nothing that shows that standing in the sidelines. And as you know, now during the week with no contact, with the amount of contact there is, you really can't practice your craft the way you do on Saturdays or Sundays.
Yeah, no question. Hey, so the two calls that we always hear about at football at every level, pass interference, two guys pushing and shoving all the way down the field, and the second one is you could call holding on the line of scrimmage just about every play if you wanted to. How tricky is that one when you're getting your officials ready for bump and run to the big guys going at it inside?
Well, I think we're in a good place with holding. When you look at holding, you have to go materially affected. Did the defender lose his feet? Was there a clear path to the quarterback or to the runner, and then the defender got taken down? And those are some of the things that you look at, and we try to teach our guys and gals. And, you know, you guys sit there and say, well, that was a real late flag. Well, there's no late flag. You see what you think is a hold, and you look at it again, and you go, is it a hold? Is it a hold? Is it a hold? Did it have a bearing? Did it have an effect on the play? And then you drop your flag, because it's not only about grabbing and technique. It's about, was that player restricted? Was he taken to the point where he got taken out of his lane? Was he taken down? And all that has to come into consideration before you pull the flag out of your pocket. And then as far as PI, basically you have two forms of PI, or you have two ways to look at it. What happens prior to the ball getting in the air? Did the offensive player create an advantage through separation with a pick, with a push-off? Right. And then for DPI, again, you have to have material effect. There's touching, there's grabbing, but again, material effect. Did I do something by rule to really keep you away from going after the football? Yeah. Contact by itself and two players going down is not a foul. Did I do something that materially affect your path towards the ball, both on offense and on defense?
So, Al, I got to ask you, I guess the reports can come in from the coaches. If they don't like a call, they'll send a review or want to get an expert, you know, you guys to explain to them what the call was about. Do you have to answer all those, and do you get on the phone with coaches every week to go over things that they may disagree with?
We have a system, Joe, where they can send in certain questions, and I answer the questions. I look at the video, and I answer the questions. And I tell them the truth, you know, and it's like that Jack Nicholson movie. If you can't handle the truth, well, then we move forward. But I tell them the truth. Yeah. When we're wrong, we're wrong. And when we're right, I'm going to hold my ground. And, yeah, there's certain guys that I talk to on the phone periodically. Me, personally, I'd rather talk to them on the phone as we're watching video than write something down, because I think a lot of times when you write certain things down, it's not as effective as you and I on the phone. And we can agree to disagree at the end. But as long as at the end we have mutual respect, we're good. But, yeah, they ask questions every week. I would, too.
Yeah. Hey, Al, so the future for high school. I know it's hard. They're having trouble finding good officials at the high school level. How do you find one of those special guys if you want to add more people? And how good do you think the high school officiating is? Because that's kind of where it starts, and even youth tackle football starts even earlier. What are your thoughts on at the high school level?
At the high school level, especially in Miami and South Florida, we play great football, as you know. So we have to keep up and make sure that we have the same kind of officiating. And I'll tell you, when I go out and look for an official, and I'm, as you know, right by Tropical Park, I go out there once in a while and watch games like I don't watch any football, right? So what we're looking for is we're looking for a guy or a gal. First of all, can he keep up? Can she keep up? I mean, I cannot put myself on the field today. I have to say that. Can they keep up physically? Do they look the part? Do they pass the eye test? Then I don't even look for a hold or a PI. I look at their communication. I look at their mechanics. I look at how they're communicating with, like I said, with the players and the sidelines. Then I might get into a call or two. But there's so many things that we look at before, because we can teach the philosophy of PI and holding. We can do that, but there's certain things that you have to have on your own when you come in.
So just to follow up to that, Al, and this maybe has more to do in the NFL. Sometimes we hear officials get out of position because the game is so fast that they can't keep up. Is that fair, where they're not in position or they don't have good anticipation of where they're going to be for a deep, whether to make a call in a deep post pattern because they're so far away from the play? Does that happen from time to time?
It does happen, Joe. And the key here is if we can get you at the right place at the right time at that mesh point, if we can get you at that mesh point when that corner stops or when that receiver stops and he cuts in or out and we can get your eyes at that mesh point, we're in good shape. And most of the time we're going to make the right call. Now, another thing the officials do during the week, they scout. The same way the two teams that they have coming on Saturday, they scout him. And we're not looking for 62 if he holds on every play. We're looking at on third and fourth with 2 minutes to go, and they come out in this set, in this formation. We know number two is going to clear the path, go downfield. Number one's going to step in and then cut out to the sideline.
Right.
And number three is going to dart across the middle and hopefully run into a linebacker. And that's the kind of stuff that we look at and we scout during the week, and that's where the officials – those 3.5 hours on Saturday, those are the easy ones, man.
Yeah.
It's all the work and all everything you put in during a week, the 30 hours on video, the tests you take, the meetings you go through. That's the tough part. But if you don't go out there and you don't do your homework, it's going to show real quick, and it's ciao bella. We're not going to see you again.
Al, it's always nice getting caught up with you, man. Really appreciate you. You're coming on with us this morning here, talking a little bit about the officiating, because you guys never win. We never hear about great calls. As you said, we only talk about those one or two calls, and my team got screwed. So thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, man. You owe me a croqueta and a café cubano.
Okay. Al Riveron, head of ACC officiating, and you can tell, as he lives down here in South Florida, has forever. We've got a lot more stuff to get to here this morning as John Crotty is going to join us. Alex Donald will join us a little bit later on up there as well as Woody, I believe it's about Clemson, man. I still believe everybody's chasing Clemson. And we'll talk more with Donald about that as well. And John Crotty, Heat color analyst, is up there. We'll talk a little Heat basketball as well as college football. Right now, I want to talk to you about Michael Kotze. Not a great point guard, no. Michael Kotze can't throw it deep. He can't catch. He doesn't run in well. But I'll tell you one thing, Michael Kotze at Choice Mortgage does. That's get you approved and get you a mortgage when you need one and get it quickly. That's what great service is about. That's why for 35 years, Michael Kotze at Choice Mortgage has been successful taking care of you. No matter what's going on, no matter what the rates are, no matter what the climate is, Michael Kotze's got programs to help you out. First-time home buyers, you want to get the best rates, but you want to get qualified. You want to quit. You want to be in a situation where you got a chance to get that home. You keep losing out because you're a first-time home buyer. You haven't been pre-approved and all those things. Michael Kotze can get it done for you. Self-employed, you've been declined by the banks. Michael Kotze's got a great program for you. Reverse mortgage, there's so many different mortgages. If you need one, I bring up the reverse mortgage. If you're 62 or older, you and your partner, you qualify. Sitting there with all that equity in your home, it could really use it. Michael Kotze at Choice Mortgage gets those things done real quickly for you. The man works 7 days a week. He has no life. He really doesn't. 561-441-2730. MLS 166-254. Rates and terms subject to change daily without notice. He's an equal housing lender.
Welcome back here to Charlotte, the ACC kickoff, the Capital One Orange Bowl Media Tour. It is sponsored by Duffy's Sports Grill. Joe, we have a special guest sitting in front of me right now, and I got to tell you, got to keep this one a little bit short because he's got a tea time coming up here later this morning.
Hey, man, it's all business up there. You're with the Orange Bowl. I get the late night run to tab up on that steak restaurant, that beautiful steak restaurant. John Crotty, Heat color analyst. John, how you doing, man?
Good, Joe. Great to hear from you, man. Miss having you up here, man.
Yeah, I think those days are done. I think I don't see those happening anymore. It's a young man's game, and you hit. Yeah,
come on, you're young at heart, Joe.
I know. I do like to have a few beers and, you know, have a little tequila and have a little fun, but paying the price early in the morning and that whole thing, and then getting in trouble, and you know, I just. want to stay away from all that stuff. By the way, John, I've been through it as a Dolphin analyst. You haven't really been through it until recent, going through that play-in thing, and it's just been a lot different after so many great years where they've been so good. I got to ask you, just in general, going through the Jimmy Butler thing last year, it wasn't Heat-like to see a Heat team go through that. Just so different.
Yeah. No, you're right. It was tough. It was a struggle, and a personality like that, a guy who's an incredible talent, you know, to have him, you know, go through that scenario, it was a drag. It really, I think it pulled on the players and the coaches and the fans too, really, right? I mean, you know, as talented as he was, the lack of clarity of what was going on with him, I think took its toll. Let the team continue to soldier through, but I think it certainly made an impact, and it was a tough finish. And I think, look, time heals all wounds, and I think he'll wind up, you know, he wound up being one of the best Heat performers that we've seen, particularly in the playoffs. Just incredible, but it was a tough ending.
All right, so we got other thing. This first time I can remember this, help me out a little bit with the history. 6 first round picks the Heat have, and there's a good chance not only we're going to have a bunch of them starting, but a bunch of them be coming off the bench. I can't remember that amount of first round picks that the Heat actually drafted in the first round.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting with all the young guys that are part of the team now, and that push for youth. I think that's going to be really impactful this season, and how the performance of these guys have is really going to make a difference, not just the first round pick, but also some of the first and second year players, right? I think are huge right now. I really like the acquisition of Norman Powell, Joe. That was huge to get a 20-point score and essentially not have to give away any of your key core talent. I thought that was an incredible coup by our front office. I thought they did an amazing job. I think Powell's a really good combo type guard, a guy who can handle but also shoot the basketball well and get back to his defensive ways. I think he's going to fit in smoothly. So it's an interesting mix so far.
Yeah. Hey, John, I got to ask you about one guy, and not trying to put you on the spot. He's a really good player. A lot of teams would love to have him. And we keep waiting, or a lot of people keep waiting, for Bam to score 23 or 24 average a night. And that's just not Bam. That's not his style. He's got no problem taking 7 or 8 shots in certain nights. And other nights, he has 30 points. What's your take on his offensive game? What do you tell Heat fans that are going, we need more out of Bam offensively?
Yeah, I think Bam's strengths are that he is kind of good at everything. He's almost like a jack of all trades, right? He's not just a scorer.
Right.
His real strength, probably his top strength, is probably as a defender, where he is one of the top 2-3 defenders every year. His ability to guard multiple positions, really, you know, what the common fan, I think, doesn't see with Bam is his ability to really make everybody else better on the defensive end. He covers a lot of mistakes, which is huge. He's a solid rebounder. I think he's become a better offensive player. He certainly had to work at it. Doesn't come as easy, but he's talented. He can get to the rim. I think this year we saw his ability to shoot the 3-ball, and I think he'll continue to build on that, Joe. So to me, you know, he's first of all, he's a guy from a personality perspective that being around the team like I am all the time, you love him. He puts the work in every day. He comes out. He talks to the media. He is the culture guy, if you will, of taking the team, taking it personally and wanting to win and keeping guys, you know, hungry and getting in guys' faces if he has to. He's the kind of player you want to play with, Joe. You want to line up with.
So, John, I got to ask you, the NIL, the transfer portal, all the craziness that all the coaches are being asked about this week, and basically everybody's a one-year free agent, if we're to be real honest about this, and a lot of guys are making money. Now we're trying to get the whole sports department under $20.5 million and want everybody to stay at their cap number. Good luck, by the way, with that one when you add up all the sports. But I'm just, what's been your take on seeing all the changes that have taken place over the last couple of years in college sports?
It's been pretty shocking. You think about, looking back and just the amount of money involved, and I've always been look, I'm a player advocate at heart, and I think it's great that the players are getting compensation, but you just want to see, to me, an equal playing field, you know, somewhere where there's guidelines and guardrails, if you will, to prevent, you know, certain teams from going too far. And I think we seem to be getting closer and closer there with what you just referenced, which is effectively a soft salary cap and some enforcement, maybe third-party enforcement that appears to be putting in place that's going to work. And, you know, we'll have to wait and see with time the execution on that. But I think that makes things a lot more palatable in terms of, you know, if the more, I think, guidelines there are at this juncture, I think it'll just help everybody move forward and have a more level playing field.
I got to tell you, you're a member of the Orange Bowl committee, and those guys the work you guys do. And besides being up there, and you're a big part of ACC and the history of the ACC as a great player in basketball at Virginia. But I know how important the ACC is to you. Like, when I see you, you know, we talk NBA and we talk other sports when I'm with you. But I get the ACC is really important, and I happen to be a big Jim Phillips fan. What are your thoughts on the future for the ACC with SEC and Big Ten, and they're a little bit of bullies, and I don't really think they care about everybody else, but that's just my opinion. But what's your take?
It's been interesting seeing just the expansion, Joe. I mean, to go from, you know, where it was to now being 17 teams and Notre Dame kind of coming in and out, right? And it's just remarkable. I mean, to have the coverage now with Cal and Stanford being part of it. You know, we saw SMU last year as well. Having Texas coverage now, it's just amazing to see the ACC expand to your old stomping grounds out there on the West Coast too. It's just amazing to me. But you know, that's the world we live in. I think the ACC continues to be, you know, one of the premier conferences, and you know, Commissioner Phillips is doing everything he can to, you know, create the revenue to try to stay, you know, with the Big Ten and the SEC, who, you know, as everyone knows, has an advantage in terms of overall revenue. But right. Look, the ACC had their biggest revenue year, over $700 million last year. You know, they're doing all the right things, and Commissioner Phillips is super, you know, smart guy. He's been doing it now for 5 years. He's really got a great rhythm, and it seems to be, after drinking out of a fire hose like a lot of these commissioners have, you know, over the last 5 years with COVID and CFP and NIL and transfer portals, it really seems like everything is finally falling into place where they can be a little more forward thinking. You know, that's my impression.
Yeah.
And they all seem to be in a better frame of mind, feel things are really going in the right direction now, which you know, if you're hearing it from them, the way they're doing it every day, I think that's a really good sign.
Yeah. Hey, John, before I forget, did you offer that nice steak? Did you guys go to the big steak restaurant last night and run up a tab at the Orange Bowl? Did you guys have that last night?
Absolutely. We take out one of the deputy commissioners, and you know, look, we're out, man. There. We, you know, look, we unfortunately we didn't have Joe Rose on our tab this year. That really inflates it.
Oh no, I'm gonna run it up while I'm there. Oh no. I need the expensive tequila. I don't need the cheap stuff. No, that real smooth stuff over there. That fancy bottle right there, that's mine. No, exactly.
Oh, there you go.
Hey, John, thank you, man. I really appreciate you coming on, talk a little bit about everything, and I know how committed you've been to the Orange Bowl and doing the right things and all the work they're doing down here with better facilities, and these football fields are putting in all over South Florida. Amazing.
That's just the great. I think that's maybe the greatest thing that Orange Bowl does, along with the Youth Football League, the legacy fields, and the impact. You know, putting those fields in place for future young athletes.
Yeah,
it's a great group to be a part of, and it's great catching up with you, Joe. I miss you, and I appreciate all you do for South Florida with your contributions day in and day out, man.
Thank you. John, I appreciate it, man. You take care of yourself up there. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it, brother.
John Cross, Heat Color Analyst, member of the Orange Bowl Committee, and I know he is really passionate about all the work they're doing up there. Hey, I'll tell you who else is passionate, Baptist Health South Florida, one of the top sports medicine programs in the country. Enter Miami, the Heat, the Panthers, and Miami Dolphins all use them, yes. FIU, FAU, yes, they all use them. They use the great doctors of Baptist Health South Florida. Not just the team doctors, not the day-to-day doctors, but it's about their specialists. When you're going to be a top sports medicine program, you got to have specialists for every part of the body, and they have to be damn good at what they do. We're not talking right out of med school. No. We're talking about experience, anything to do with the knee, shoulder, foot and ankle, hand specialist, back specialist, hip and knee replacement, and Achilles doctors. Yeah, listen, if you're going through it, and you know the deal, the more active you are, no matter what age you are, the more competitive you are, sooner or later we all get injured. And when we do, everybody wants to go to the best. And you don't have, just because you have money, you don't have to leave South Florida. Not when you have Baptist Health South Florida, man. Top notch. Three great facilities that I talk about. They got a lot more, but Doctors Hospital in Coral Gables, at Hard Rock Stadium right next to the training facility, and 595 and Pine Island Implantation, Broward County. So, so easy to get to. Visit BaptistHealth.net/ortho. Let's get you healthy, back out playing the sports you love the most. Hey, welcome back. Good morning to everybody out there as we go right back up to ACC. Woody's up there. I know Donald's going to join us coming up here at 9 o'clock. We'll talk to him. Boy, old Rhett Lashley from SMU. I love that guy. He is getting it all stirred up with the SEC, came in and just came on fire. That top of the SEC strong, but the rest of them, they're just teams. And I was like, wow, Rhett Lashley getting after it. So he made it. He wanted to get the word. I'm guessing he had a reason he was doing that, and it probably had something to do with Texas and Texas A&M, that he jumped in on that party, as SMU looks like they're going to be around for a while. You know what I didn't know, Woody? I just found out. I didn't realize the former University of Miami quarterback, Van Dyke, left Wisconsin, and he's at SMU now. Did you know that?
Well, Joe, you know that a lot of times it can be more lucrative to stay in college than to end up in the pros, right?
But I think the SMU quarterback is back again for he's a good player last year. He's back for another season. So I don't know.
Their offense was incredible last year.
Oh, my God. The SMU offense with running back, former – where did he go? To Palmetto High School, I believe. Running back was really good. They had a hell of an offense, yes. And, that was great. Listen, Rhett Lashley, hell of a coach.
Who would you put on top of the league right now, Joe, this ACC league? You know, I have to vote, actually. I have a vote in this thing, so maybe I'll just piggyback off you here. But who do you think is the top team in the league going into the season?
Clemson, always Clemson, Clemson, Clemson.
Okay.
But no, number two? SMU, SMU, SMU.
Okay, I thought you were going to Miami there. Okay.
No. Not till you beat them. Get them out of the ACC championship game like last year. And they got a lot of money. Listen, SMU, you know, everybody's talking about all these schools spending money. I don't think SMU's taking a backseat to too many people these days either. They got a lot of money. Apparently that oil money got split up pretty well between A&M, Texas, and SMU. So... But Miami's right up there, too. You know, got off to the great start, won all the tight ball games, found a way to win, and then defense just absolutely, I don't know how else to say it, fell apart. It was just terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible at the end. So, but we're counting on that getting fixed up and cleaned up. Not that it has to be the number one defense in the ACC, but needs to play a lot better, and especially in coverage. You know what's more frustrating, just the coverage and guys can't find the ball in the secondary, is how many guys ran wide open, you know? Like,
yeah.
Whether it was zone or what. Sometimes a bad zone can look like a mental mistake, right? Somebody's in the wrong position. And
I feel like we're reliving the Syracuse game right now.
I am. That's what I was going through. You're right.
That game was, oh, my goodness.
And you go, here we go again, another shootout, and can we – stay
yeah,
ahead.
Your offense still had a chance, right?
Right. But anyway, I don't know about Louisville. A lot of people like Louisville think they've got a chance to be in there again. Hey, listen, I guess we got to mention Georgia Tech, because Georgia Tech right now has just owned the University of Miami. So it'll be fun. I think things have balanced out. I think Syracuse is probably going to be good. So I'm like everybody else. I want to see, you know, what it's going to look like. But you know what I have learned? No matter how good you are, look at all those ACC games right down to the wire. Every friggin' game felt like it was down to the wire. Didn't it seem like there were a lot of blowouts? Seemed like a lot of really close games that went right down to the end of the game. That's how it was for the University of Miami. Hell, the backup quarterback never got to play because Cam Ward had to play the whole game just to make sure they could win or go ahead late or come from behind or try to win. So the backup didn't get a lot of work. That's that makes it tough. So that's my take. But, hey, UM's going to be right up there with the amount of money, the recruiting classes, the transfer portal ranking, the classes that Mario – has put together. You got to win a lot of these games now, right? You look at transfer portal. He got some real good ones. You look at recruiting classes the last 3 years. Mario's had some of the best recruiting classes. Now it's time to put it together. And I think he feels this is the most balanced team he's had. Last year it was number one passing team in the country, wasn't it? Unless Syracuse was number one. They're one or two, and they scored a ton of points, but they're giving up a lot of points on defense. So if they get that, knock that down, take some pressure off where the quarterback doesn't have to throw it 40 or 50 times a game, although Carson Beck, you know, has played in some of those games, he should be fine. So anyway, yeah, I got those.
Well, Joe, if you look at the league, it is kind of interesting, right? Because you know, he's talking about the league being balanced. It really is a balanced league, right? Like you had two teams last year, maybe three, that you could say were truly terrible, right?
I think Stanford
with FSU
was really
leading
bad.
The charge.
Yeah, I thought Stanford.
Stanford was terrible. They had three wins. FSU was, I mean, they were an embarrassment. And then Wake Forest, maybe you could throw them in there too. But even Cal had six wins.
Well, Cal was in a lot of tight ball games and didn't win them, but was close to winning a lot of games. Hell, they had Miami. You're up by, 24 points?
Oh, yeah, they did.
Those Cam throws a pick six. I thought it was ball game. That guy runs it back, and I went, holy crap, they're in trouble. And then, of course, they ran the track meet the rest of the way and got some stops on defense, and that thing was got turned around quickly. But, yeah. Boy, it's hard. It's hard because I see they're going, could go 10-3, but could go 6-6 or, you know, 10-2 to 6-6 on some of the highs and lows of schedules that, and how it's going to turn out. But I just think a lot of weeks, man, these games are really close. They come down late in the game, which makes college football great. And the opening week, my God, the opening couple of weeks, a lot of the top teams are going to be playing each other. So that's one thing about college football, right? It gets right into it. Notre Dame week one, on what, Florida week four, if I'm not mistaken. And so you get an idea. You know, it's crazy. You can lose both those games and play well in your conference and win it all. But You want to get at least one of those games, Florida or Notre Dame.
It's actually a really good point, though, Joe, because I mean the ultimate goal, right, is to win the ACC, get into that playoff.
Yes, doesn't do any good to beat Florida, and then at the end of the year, you can't beat Georgia Tech and you can't beat Syracuse, right? Yeah.
Yeah, because then you're not getting in regardless, right? So,
right.
As fun as those games are going to be, and that opener is going to be a hot ticket. It's not the end of the world if it doesn't go your way, right?
But you know what? Look, you want to win the game, and it's important to win.
Yes.
And you got talent to win, but you don't want to get blown out. You don't want to do anything to turn. You want to have an impressive game. You want to put it together on both sides of the ball, get some stops, score some points. But Notre Dame is good now. Just saw them deep into the playoffs. They had a hell of a team. They actually went to the finals, didn't they? Did Notre Dame go to the finals last year against Ohio State?
They did.
And made a little
comeback.
You
want a couple of these games, by the way, Joe? You want a couple of these opening week games that we got for the ACC that are going to be a lot of fun?
Yeah, what do you have?
So you got Colorado and Georgia Tech. That should be an interesting game. You got Syracuse and Tennessee. You got Alabama playing Florida State.
Ooh.
Alabama's favored by 12.5 points in that game, by the way. LSU and Clemson. Clemson favored by 3. That's the Saturday game.
That should be a hell of a game.
Cal,
too.
Oregon State in a battle of former Pac whatever teams. And Virginia Tech, South Carolina, and then on Monday night, there you got North Carolina and TCU.
You know that LSU-Clemson game? Some people think those two best quarterbacks in the country. That'll be a fun one. That'll be a really, really good game. See what happens. Anyway, we got more stuff to get to. What do you got? 9 o'clock hour coming up here. We're gonna track down our other member of the ACC. Donald will join us. We'll talk to him and get some more into stuff. We'll also get into some Miami Dolphins stuff. They're getting ready to start practice here in just a few minutes. Right now, though, I want to talk to you about something very, very important. It's about my friends at Air Around the Clock Air Conditioning and Plumbing. You know, I've been talking about Air Around the Clock Air Conditioning and Plumbing for 35, 36 years now. That thing was built. I hung around with Lenny a lot. It was built on great service, and great service 7 days a week, as he always said. Even on a Saturday or Sunday night, you had an emergency, Air Around the Clock's coming out and take care of you. Got people on call 7 days a week for you. We got trained and certified technicians, the best in the business. We got 135 trucks on the road every day. So we work 7 days a week. We got 36 years of experience. We got a warehouse full of air conditioning units and water heaters. So the next time you have a problem, we don't have to order them and ship them in. We have them right here in South Florida, ready to go for you. Matter of fact, same-day installation is always the goal every day. Now, sometimes we can't get to it when it's real busy and hot out there, but we have financing plans. We'll get out there quickly to take care of you. Family-owned and operated. Yeah, Eric took over. Big Daddy, we lost him a couple years ago, but his son, Mike, and Chippy, and all the rest of them doing a great job to make sure all your air conditioning and plumbing problems are taken care of. These guys are good and ready to help you. Hey, you see the billboards, that beautiful lady on there? She's telling you where to go when you have an air conditioning problem. I'm telling you, too, 1-888-FIX-MY-AC. That's 1-888-FIX-MY-AC for Air Around the Clock Air Conditioning and Plumbing.